this case is another one in which we are no longer experimenting, but actually using electronic communication, audiovisual, to conduct oral arguments. We've been doing this since the end of May. It's worked every time in some fashion. Occasionally, we've had a problem with a screen freezing. Once we lost a visual, and we had to pick it up on a telephone. And so that's why we have backup procedures in place. If there are any problems, just pause in your arguments, and we'll stop the clock and pick up once we restore it. So this case today is number 79576 COA. It's Anthony Barbieri versus State of Nevada Employment Security Division. This is in the pro bono program. So Mr. Barbieri is represented by the Hutchison and Stephan Law Firm. Mr. Wall had appeared on this case, but we were notified that this was also in connection with Boyd Law School at UNLV, and that we'd have a law student here today. And that is Dylan Lauder. How do you say that?
Lauder.
Okay, so Mr. Lauder's here. And what about Troy Jordan?
That's Your Honor, counsel for ESD.
All right.
Your Honor, Michael Wall, I am also present with Dylan Lauder. Mr. Lauder will be presenting the oral argument.
All right. So was that Mr. Jordan that was just speaking before Mr. Wall?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. So again, they can't see you in Las Vegas, but I can see you. So strike what I said before about Mr. Barbieri being present. He's not here. So Mr. Lauder and Mr. Waller are in different locations, it looks like, pretty clearly. But you're still supervising Mr. Wall?
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
All right. Well, we are disappointed. We are not going to hear the argument from you today because you always do an outstanding job. But we are very excited for Mr. Lauder. This is the second time we've had a student from Boyd present an oral argument. We had one at the end of October, Greg Clower did. And Mr. Clower did a very nice job. He's a classmate then of Mr. Lauder. So did you get some help from Mr. Clower, Mr. Lauder, to prepare for this?
Yes, I did, Your Honor.
All right. Did he tell you I hit him with a question 1 minute into his argument?
He did, and I listened to it, Your Honor.
All right. Well, we'll be a little bit nicer today.
Maybe.
Okay. All right. Any success yet in Las Vegas for the visual?
No, it's okay. I don't know what's going on here, but I mean, we can hear everybody fine. So maybe you can just proceed just, you know, orally. I don't know how important it is to see everybody on the screen. Right. I'd like to see you guys on the screen, especially since we do have a Boyd Law student here that I'm not familiar with. But I mean, as long as you guys can see us and hear us, because I don't know how long this is going to, I know I can see Lily doing stuff, but I don't know how long this is going to take. All right,
let me just ask again with IT. We have Jason and Carson, Lily in Las Vegas, if it looks like we're going to regain visual or not.
I'm not sure. The only way they would really check is to restart.
I have regained visual of Las Vegas on my screen.
Okay. All right, Lily, I don't know if you could hear Jason, IT, and Carson. He thought you might have to restart it, so I don't know if that means rebooting it or what.
Yeah, that would be a reboot. We'd have to reconnect. But...
Your Honor, I clicked on the other view and then came back, and then when I did so, I got a visual. So I have a visual in Las Vegas on my computer.
Okay, so it looks like the only problem then is from the Las Vegas courtroom.
I think they're trying to reboot now because our screens here just all went black. So let's kind of I mean, I can still hear you guys, but I think they're obviously trying stuff here.
All right. Well, if we're trying the reboot, we might as well wait then. I was going to suggest we move ahead because I don't know how long a reboot will take, but
this is the reboot the whole system. You might have to dial in again, right?
Well, I mean, I don't really want to do that if the judges in Las Vegas are comfortable proceeding just with audio, and I'll give a running commentary as needed.
Chief Judge Gibbons, this is Judge Bulla. I'm fine with proceeding.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I mean, we can hear you guys just fine, so I'm fine with proceeding.
All right, like
If you have any, you know, one of the things we always tell people is if any of the lawyers have any connection problems, to kind of wave their hand, but we won't be able to see that. But Judge Gibbons, you'll have to track that for us.
Okay. All right. If anybody commits any contemptuous acts, I'll be sure to describe them for the record. All right. So, Mr. Wall, watch out today. You're not talking. You've delegated it to your co-counsel for the day, it sounds like.
Yes, I have. Thank you, Your Honor.
Does that include rebuttal argument?
Yes, it does, Your Honor.
All right. So, Mr. Lauder, you're going to succeed and surpass what Mr. Clower did because he allowed his supervising attorney, or she took over one reason or the other. I'm not sure what, but she provided the rebuttal argument. All right. So you've got the whole situation today. I assume there's no objection, Mr. Jordan, to having Mr. Lauder do the entire argument today?
No, Your Honor.
All right. And proceeding, even though there's no visual of the judges in Las Vegas can't see you?
No objection.
All right. We'll proceed. Mr. Lauder, do you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
3 minutes. Okay. So, Judge Tao, do you have any other introductory comments?
No, just thank you guys for your patience in working with our tech guys. Obviously, we're having a little bit of a glitch today, but we can hear you, and that should be good enough, and that's the most important part. But welcome to the Boyd student. Hope you're excited. This should be an interesting argument. And also, Mr. Wall, I wanted to thank you. I know that you guys are taking this case pro bono. You know, there are more cases out there than our lawyers willing to handle them, and we're always happy when any lawyer steps up. But we're obviously even happier when a firm of your reputation and quality agrees to take cases like this. We wish everybody in town would do that. It would certainly make it would help the parties out there, but it would certainly make our jobs easier as well. So thank you and your firm. And in fact, I think you guys are also on the next case too, right? Your firm took two cases in the promoter room. That's awesome, and really want to thank you for that.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that. It is for our firm to represent pro bono individuals, and for me particularly on appeal, do that. And it has been an honor to serve with Dylan Lauder and Paige.
Right.
Can't think of her last name. They were the UNLV students that I worked with.
Right. Well, that meant we received a much longer appellant's brief than we normally would have gotten. All right. Judge Bulla, do you have any opening comments?
Welcome. As you all probably can see, Judge Tao and I are in our masks, so if you can't understand something we say, please let us know and we'll restate it. And we're very excited to have you all here and to listen to some good argument this afternoon.
All right. Thank you, Judge Bulla. All right, Mr. Lauder, you have 15 minutes with a warning sign. We'll go off at the three-minute mark, so you have 3 minutes left then. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Dylan Lauder, and I am a UNLV Boyd student here practicing under Rule 49.3. I represent the appellant, Mr. Anthony Barbieri. At this time, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Barbieri is entitled to unemployment benefits because he did not quit. He was fired, plain and simple. and there was no substantiated basis for firing him. Instead, Timeshare Liquidators fired him and held his check for ransom until he signed paperwork saying that he had quit. We ask that this court reverse and remove his disqualification for benefits so that he can get the unemployment benefits that he's entitled to. I want to first turn to how Mr. Barbieri was fired, because it makes plain that he was indeed fired and did not quit. Then I will explain how the second referee and district court erred as a matter of law. These facts were reviewed by two courts and two referees, and they clearly show that Timeshare Liquidators fired Mr. Barbieri at the latest 2 days after he was sent home for being late. This timeline shows that Mr. Barbieri was fired and didn't quit, but was forced to say that he had quit in order to receive his final paycheck a full week after he was supposed to. Day one was August 25th, 2017. It was a Friday and a payday. Mr. Barbieri arrived at work and was told to go home and was not given his paycheck, when normally he receives direct deposit. Day two, he returned to work and was told not to clock in, and was told that he needed to sign some paperwork. Again, he was not offered his paycheck. Day three, he returned to work and was told that he was fired, but he was sent home without his paycheck again. On that day, he turned in his uniforms because he knew that it would be deducted from his final paycheck if he had not. At this point, Timeshare Liquidators clearly fired him, but refused to pay the money that he had earned. Fast forward to day seven. 5 days after he was fired, 1 week after he was initially sent home, Mr. Barbieri was finally given the paycheck. 7 days late, and only after he signed a report saying that he had quit 3 days earlier. And this timeline shows that Mr. Barbieri was fired on August 27th. He did not quit after that. He wanted to get paid. And he only got paid after signing the paperwork. Reverse back to day four, the day after Mr. Barbieri was terminated. He applied for unemployment benefits. The initial adjudicator reached out to both him and Timeshare Liquidators to substantiate whatever had happened regarding his separation. Timeshare Liquidators argued that he had quit. Mr. Barbieri said that he was fired. When the initial adjudicator reached out to Timeshare Liquidators to substantiate their quit theory, they never responded. They refused to respond and did not send anything that showed further that he had quit. Though that adjudicator ruled that he had been fired for misconduct and that he would not receive his benefits. Mr. Barbieri appealed that determination to an appeals referee. Again, before the appeals referee, Timeshare Liquidators argued that Mr. Barbieri had quit. Mr. Barbieri, of course, argued that he was fired. And even after several attempts to argue that he had quit, the first appeals referee made the decision that Mr. Barbieri had been fired for misconduct. Again, like the initial adjudicator, for being tardy. Then, Mr. Barbieri filed a petition for judicial review. He appeared before Judge Gloria Sturman, and before the date of appearance, Timeshare Liquidators was served both with the petition and Mr. Barbieri's brief and ESD's brief. Timeshare Liquidators made the intentional decision not to participate to maintain its quit theory. Judge Sturman was not persuaded by the tardiness constituting misconduct. And she decided to remand for additional fact-finding based on one small issue, whether Mr. Barbieri's use of profanity constituted misconduct warranting a denial of benefits. Then the second appeals referee, it was remanded to a second appeals referee.
Mr. Lauder, yes. Didn't the first district court that heard this, Judge Sturman, remand this for a full proceeding on the merits and not limited it to one issue?
No, Your Honor. The order specifically states that Judge Sturman wanted on remand them to determine whether or not his profanity constituted misconduct. She did use the language, a new hearing on the merits before a new referee. But she defined merits early on in that opinion. This was her language. As to the merits of the petition, the manner in which respondent employer suspended or terminated was procedurally defective, as employer failed to provide petitioner the status of his employment. Mr. Barbieri was prejudiced by the lack of notice as to the status of his employment. If he didn't know the status of his employment, then there's no way that he could have quit. He knew, looking at the evidence, that he had been fired, and she remanded to see if the profanity amounted to enough misconduct.
Okay. So, do you have any authority that states that the district court can restrict a remand to a single issue like that in light of the statute that generally allows an appeals referee to hear everything?
Your Honor, I do not have any authority to cite right now concerning that. However,
In the normal situation, you would be right. But in the administrative law area, there are a lot of very particular statutes that restrict and define what courts can do because administrative agencies should be deciding their own cases. So judicial review is limited to what is allowed by statute. District courts can't just treat it like it's a normal court case with a remand. They have to follow the statutes.
That's correct, Your Honor. But both the initial adjudicator and the first appeals referee had heard the quit issue. And Judge Sturman saw the complete record, knowing that Timeshare Liquidators had argued that he had quit. And the reason why she wanted to restrict the remand was because Timeshare Liquidators could not substantiate anything about the quit beforehand.
All right, but now, Judge Sturman didn't address the quit issue.
That's correct. However, she did look at the entire record, and she did consider Timeshare Liquidators' theory that he had quit. And Timeshare Liquidators, again, refused to participate in the petition. They could have preserved that issue, but they failed to.
Okay, so let's say you're correct on interpreting the first district court order. When the case got back, as you know, Mr. Barbieri agreed to have the quit issue decided by the second referee. So I know he's pro se, but what rule is there that allows somebody representing himself to not follow normal process and be bound by normal rules? And that is, if you agree to something, you can't complain about it later on appeal.
So when the second appeals referee said that he wanted to assume jurisdiction, he did not give Mr. Barbieri a chance to oppose jurisdiction. He said, we're either going to talk about it now or we're going to talk about it now. When Mr. Barbieri appeared before Judge Tierra Jones later on, the second petition for judicial review, he stated that Judge Gloria Sturman had remanded based on the merits being defined as whether the discharge was for misconduct, not whether he was discharged, that had already been decided, but whether he had engaged in misconduct. Mr. Barbieri could not have waived his argument. Sorry, could not have waived the notice because that issue wasn't properly assumed by the second appeals referee anyway. Again, as you said, Your Honor, he was acting pro se, and he didn't realize the error until later on when he appeared before Judge T.R. Jones.
All right. Well, you've indicated earlier in your argument that the second referee, and that's the one we're concerned about on this appeal primarily, you feel the evidence didn't support the conclusion that he quit. And I know you can argue that, but we typically defer to the fact finder on issues like that. And when there's disputed evidence, you know, it typically goes in favor of the fact finder if there's evidence to support the conclusion. So, but in this case, not only was there that, the appeals referee, the second one, said, all right, even if I'm wrong on the voluntary quit issue, I find that he would have been fired for misconduct. So even if the referee was wrong, and he was fired, he didn't quit, there was misconduct. There appears to be ample evidence in support of that conclusion of the second appeals referee.
In the conclusion of misconduct, Your Honor?
Yes. So if there's an alternative basis to support the decision, aren't we as a court bound to then go ahead and affirm it because there's two different grounds? Or are you also arguing that the misconduct finding is wrong too?
Your Honor, I am arguing the misconduct finding is wrong. In fact, in the second appeals referee's decision, it stated that the appeal determination issued under misconduct statute is set aside. So he based his entire decision on the voluntary quit theory. Again, that voluntary quit theory that was not properly before him, that had already been decided and not appealed.
All right. Do you want to save your last couple of minutes for a rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
Thank you.
Good job, Mr. Lowry. You covered a lot of ground. And Mr. Jordan, then, you have the full 15 minutes to respond.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Troy Jordan, Senior Legal Counsel to the Employment Security Division, on behalf of the Respondents Employment Security Division, its administrator, who is now Linda Parvin, and the ESB Board of Review. As a housekeeping matter, when I refer to, because I know there's been some confusion even in the briefing, with numerous sets of Bates numberings on the same document, when I'm referring to a Bates number, it will be the Bates number in the middle of the page as submitted by the Clark County Clerk on January 10th of 2020, which is where I want to start my argument. But the overarching argument by the appellant is contradicted not only in the record itself, but by statute. And frankly, as you already pointed out, Justice Gibbons, by the appellant's own actions and wishes during the proceedings. I'd first like to start with the order from Judge Gloria Sturman herself sending this back the first time, which is actually where ESD would argue this proceeding started, not ended, as the appellant has attempted to argue. It says specifically the matter is remanded to the Office of Appeals, bypassing the Board of Review, for a new hearing on the merits before a new referee. That's located at page 36 of the Record on Appeal. There can be no confusion as to any findings prior to that when she says it's a new hearing on the merits. There is no limiting. There is no, this is limited purpose. There is no with instructions to do this. It is simply a new hearing on the merits. And that is specifically called for in NRS 233B, 125 subsection 3, also known as the Administrative Procedures Act in Chapter 233B. When the hearing gets back to the Employment Security Division, these proceedings and the procedure are controlled by NRS 612. And as you correctly noted earlier in your questioning, Justice Gibbons, they have to follow the procedures. NRS 612-500, subsection 2, specifically says the court may, or excuse me, the appeals tribunal shall inquire into and develop all facts bearing on the issues and shall receive and consider evidence without regard to statutory or common law rules. In addition to the issues raised by the appeal determination, the appeal tribunal may consider all issues affecting the claimant's right to benefits from the beginning of the period covered by the determination to the date of the hearing. That statute is the basis for which this referee added the voluntary quit analysis, because he saw it literally 62 pages into the transcript. That part of the transcript is specifically located at the record on appeal at pages 212 and 213, in which the referee says, I believe there's a voluntary quit issue here, and he goes into a colloquy with the parties about how they're going to handle it, at which time Mr. Barbieri, the appellant, specifically says, no, let's proceed today.
So, Mr. Jordan, let me interrupt just briefly and ask this question. Based on your interpretation of NRS 612.500, what you're really telling us is that the second referee did not have to consider the law of the case, or did not have to consider the first referee's determination, apparently, that the voluntary quit issue was not supported, and that the second referee could look at the entire case again without reference to the first decisions. Is that what I understand you're saying?
Yes, and that's specifically called for because he can look at all issues related to all issues related to the right to benefit. One referee's decision is not binding on another. As to the term law of the case, ESD would take issue that there was any law of the case here, period, and that's in the briefing. But with regard to this case, ESD's argument in large part would be this. If there was any law of the case made, which we do not concede, by Judge Sturman's order, it would have related to the termination. She didn't make any findings regarding quit, and that's at the appellate level of this area. We don't concede that that's the case in the first place because we don't believe those are factual findings when it gets remanded in the first place, unless it says remanded with orders to follow the orders as directed in this order or follow proceedings consistent with this order. It simply said remanded for a new hearing on the merits. But with regard to the quit, there are no such findings. In fact, if you look at pages 35 and 36 of the record, because there were numerous other motions filed by the appellant during that time, she didn't even get to the merits of the petition to line 13 of page 35 of the record, where it says, as to the merits of the petition, and then she takes issues with some of the findings of the first referee and remands it. There's no mention of the quit whatsoever. So even if we were, in ESD's view, even if we were to concede there was somehow law of the case under this order regarding the termination, the fact-finding didn't violate that because it found an alternative basis to deny benefits in this case. With that said, as Justice Gibbons alluded to earlier, was there substantial evidence to support that quit? ESD would argue absolutely. With that said, the record at page 120 indicates that there's an agreement where he signed it that said he quit. There's actually two copies of that in the record, neither of which did he object to. That lack of objection and the entry of those exhibits is located at the record at page 158. At page 197, the appellant admitted during his testimony that he had turned in his uniform shirts, and that was later corroborated by the statement, which again was not objected to. At 261, that said that the employer stated that he had turned in his uniform shirts and said, have a good one, see you later. Indicia of someone who doesn't expect to be coming back because commonsensically he's turned in his work uniforms.
Well, Mr. Jordan, the argument you just heard from your opposing counsel today is that he had already been terminated, so that's why he's turning in his uniform, not that he was quitting at that moment. How do you respond to that?
Well, this isn't a fact-finding court, Your Honor, and both the referee and Judge Tierra Jones have found that that factual basis is that he did quit, and that that was an indicia that he did quit. With regard to the argument that he wasn't terminated, that's kind of that he was terminated at that point, that's kind of interesting, because the first remand was based on the fact that Judge Sturman could not find whether he was suspended or terminated. So now they're taking the position that he was terminated, but it wasn't for misconduct, which is actually in apposite with the previous position they're taking. The remand, if you read the order at page 35, says there's an issue of whether he was suspended or terminated, which is clearly a sign that there was no finality and why there's no law of the case. With that said, there's ample evidence in the record to support that decision. We would ask that you affirm it on that basis. With regard to the argument, I want to reiterate, with regard to the argument as to NRS 612-500 subsection 2, they must follow that procedure. And these benefits issues change on an almost daily basis, which is why that statute is there. That statute is there to allow for all issues to be raised. That's exactly what happened here. The referee made the correct decision, and that was ultimately affirmed by Judge Tierra Jones. The arguments by the appellant are contradicted in the order itself, at its very text that says it was a new hearing on the merits, and are rejected in the fact that the appellant's actions were that he signed a document that said he quit and turned in his uniforms. Interestingly, early on in the proceedings, when this remand from Judge Sturman came through, he championed it and claimed he won. He didn't object to it at that time, didn't appeal it. That issue is now closed. On remand, he was fine with having the quit issue done that day. He didn't object to any of this and didn't preserve any of those arguments. Admittedly, he is pro se, but as the Supreme Court has made very clear, pro ses are held to that same standard. Mr. Jordan,
let me interrupt you. I mean, in effect, he did win when Judge Sturman remanded the case, because the initial hearing officer or referee refused benefits based on misconduct. And I think what Judge Sturman said, and please, you know, tell me otherwise, is that there weren't specific findings. So she remanded it for a hearing on the merits. And then the question becomes, was there substantial factual support for this concept that's now before us, that Mr. Barbieri, was fired? Or did he quit? And that's where we're at right now. And so although we are not the finder of fact here, there still has to be evidentiary support. And one of my questions is, and, you know, again, if he was required to sign the form to get his paycheck, the form that says he's quit, how does that support it's a voluntary quit, which is what the statute requires for no benefits to be awarded, correct? So
well,
how
I
does
would,
that work?
I would say, first of all, that's not a fact found by the referee that he was forced to sign it. That was the allegation Mr. Barbieri made. The fact finding by the referee was that he signed a document that said he had quit, because it was a separation notice that clearly said, I quit on it. It's in actually located right on the middle of the document that said reason for leaving, quit. The argument by counsel for the appellant today is an allegation made by Mr. Barbieri. It's not an actual finding of fact by the referee. That finding of fact by the referee that he did in fact sign that he quit, is the finding that was adopted by the district court, specifically by Judge Tierra Jones. The allegation made today by the appellant is an attempt to relitigate that issue in this court, despite that fact finding.
So, Mr. Jordan, are you saying on that specific point, the form says reason for leaving, the employee has can put whatever they want in there, and if the employee put fired, he still would have gotten his paycheck?
I don't know. I cannot argue whether he would have gotten his paycheck or not. That's between him and the employer. What I can say is that the only issue for a referee in unemployment benefits is the separation. And when he signs a document that says, I quit, it's substantial evidence to support an allegation that he quit. Furthermore, I would argue the other side of the quit issue that hasn't come up yet today is this. NRS 612.380 requires that if he is found to have quit, that can be excused and benefits awarded for good cause. Mr. Barbieri has yet to present in any way, shape, or form, whether it be at the referee level, the district court level, or in his briefing, any good cause for that quit. So the fact of the matter still remains that there is substantial evidence to report a quit without cause because no cause has been presented because Mr. Barbieri has maintained the position he was fired.
Okay, so you're essentially answering Judge Bulla's question. If he quit, he's not getting benefits if he quit voluntarily. He has to assert good cause for quitting. In other words, like he's forced out.
Correct. And he never asserted that in any way, shape, or form because he denied that he quit in the first instance. Therefore, there's no doubt that there is the finding of the referee is supported by evidence because the second prong of quitting to gain benefits is not there. And it is undisputed that it is not there because it was never raised.
Because he consistently maintained his position that he was fired. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, that's correct.
All right, so let's...
So there would have been no reason for him to have put forth evidence that there was good cause for him quitting because he maintained the position that he was fired.
Well, the reason that he would have to maintain that is it's the burden on him to show good cause if the quit is being litigated. And he knew absolutely that the quit was being litigated because it was brought up by the referee, as we talked about earlier, at pages 212 and 213. And that is why the referee gave him the choice to continue the hearing to prepare for that if he so felt so, and he didn't. He specifically said, let's proceed.
All right, Mr. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan.
You're at the end of your time, but I do need to ask you to address the final point that was made by the appellant in response to my question, and that is, was there an alternative finding by the appeals referee that he was fired for misconduct, and that decision is supported by the record? So it was like a two-part question.
Yes, Your Honor, I would argue that is the clearest cut. There was numerous... tardiness. There were F-bombs thrown at his supervisors. I don't think the evidence there is anything other than misconduct if the finding of termination is upheld.
Right, but was there an actual finding of, if you didn't quit, you were fired, and you were fired for misconduct?
I believe so, Your Honor.
Yeah. All right, thank you, Mr. Jordan. All right, we'll go back to the appellant side of the case here, and we have just over 2 minutes left. A lot of points to cover in 2 minutes, so pick your most important one, Mr. Lauder, and proceed.
Mr. Barbieri was fired, plain and simple. He did not quit, and he was not fired for misconduct. This court reviews under a standard of substantial evidence. This court is allowed to look at the record and see if there was substantial evidence showing that he had quit. When Mr. Barbieri signed the paperwork, he saw that he was not eligible for rehire. He had signed this paperwork before, 2 years previous, when he had taken a leave of absence. And in that instance, there was no indication that he was not eligible for rehire. In his mind, it was confirmed that he had been fired. When he signed that paper, he did not see quit at the top of the page. Again, he was signing this so that he could get his final paycheck. I'm sure liquidators kept Mr. Barbieri in limbo, telling him that he was fired, but refusing to give him his paycheck until he signed this form, a week after it was due to him. The separation report, says that he quit on August 29th. However, the record supports that he applied for unemployment benefits on August 28th. If that is the case, then why would he have applied for unemployment benefits? If it was the case that he had voluntarily quit on the 29th, why would he have applied for benefits the day before? It's nonsensical. Timeshare liquidators gamed Mr. Barbieri and is trying to game the system. It litigated, lost, and failed to appeal the voluntary quit issue. The record, full and complete, shows that Mr. Barbieri did not quit. He was fired. We ask that this court reverse and remove Mr. Barbieri's disqualification for benefits so that he can get the benefits that he's entitled to. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Latter. You timed that argument perfectly. Excellent job by both counsel. Mr. Latter, I can see you're on your way to be a good trial or appellate lawyer, or both.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Jordan's already done it in his career, so he's just reinforcing it. But, and of course, we know Mr. Walls from his arguments in front of this court and from everything else he's done in his career, so we don't even have to discuss that. He's already up there. So any rate, this matter will be taken under submission for a written decision in the near future. And we thank, again, the Hutchison Steffen Law Firm for taking this case on pro bono and going one step further and working with Boyd Law School to help train students and give them the opportunity to make the argument. I hope, Mr. Wall, you report back to the other members of the firm that this went really well and that you recommend they do it again.
Yes, I will do so, Your Honor.
And the court really appreciates it. Judge Tao, do you have any concluding comments?
No, just to thank everybody again. It's a good argument, interesting issue. And again, thank you for taking this case pro bono and the next one that we're about to hear as well. But, you know, we haven't had a lot of Boyd students argue in front of us. I think you're the second or maybe the third one. I can't quite remember. But it's interesting. We were kind of just talking about this before I came in here, that it's actually, you know, a lot of people might assume that a Boyd student wouldn't be as good as some attorneys, but in our, you know, in limited experience, sometimes they're better because they're really enthusiastic. They dig into the record. They really know their case in and out in a way that, because of that sort of excitement factor, in a way that some, you know, attorneys, practicing attorneys, you know, may not dig into the case. And so our experience has been really positive with Boyd students arguing. So thank you, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Judge Bola?
I just thoroughly enjoyed the arguments. Thank you both so much, and thank you, Mr. Wall, for being such a good teacher. We appreciate that, and thank you all for working hard for your clients. Mm-hmm. You both did a great job. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Your Honor. Right.
And Mr. Wall, I wanted to express my condolences to you and your firm for the loss of Justice Thomas Steffen, his passing recently. And I wanted to know if you saw the tribute that was in the Washoe County Bar Association, the writ, the monthly publication. Did you see that? Came out a couple days ago.
I did not see that, Your Honor.
All right, well, you're going to have to...
I will go looking for it.
You'll have to find that. Judge David Hardy from Reno wrote a very stirring tribute to Justice Steffen, you know, for his many years on the Nevada Supreme Court and also in the legal career and his whole legal career, his family, and what he's done for the state, the country. I mean, it was really... I mean, I was like, oh, wow, after I read that. And it was short. It wasn't long. I mean, he said a lot in a few words.
Yes, he has really been missed around here.
Oh. All right. as I said, we'll take this under submission, and we will get back to you soon through the mail. So thank you all again, and Mr. Lauder, I hope you continue on and encourage other students and help the next one that wants to do the same thing that you're doing.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, we'll be in recess.